Let's talk a bunch of different topics.
How'd her career get there?
This is a podcast with Lauren Asghari.
This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And my guest today is Dr. Lola Adeyemi, who is the founder and CEO of Mentoring Her, amongst a multitude of other accomplishments, a master's degree from Harvard and Johns Hopkins, and also a 2020 recipient of the Global Achievement Award from Johns Hopkins. So welcome. We are thrilled to have you.
Thank you very much, Lauren.
So let's start. Let's jump off with present day, and then we'll go backwards. Can you give an overview of what is Mentoring Her?
So Mentoring Her is a social networking platform for women to mentor other women. It's really basically a way where you can connect with a woman with the aid of technology for mentorship. It's like a Facebook, Meet, LinkedIn combined, but here you make meaningful connections. So when you connect with someone, it's not just to say, hey, I'm connected. It's more to say, hey, I want to talk to you. You have a skill set that I have and that I need, or you have the experience that I need, I want to learn from you. I want to grow with you or grow from your experience. And so it's just a way to make meaningful connections. Like we say, it's all about communication, community, and connections. It's a place where it's a great community of women that have volunteered their time to speak with other women and young girls to see that, hey, I hear you. I have walked this path before you. And so let me help you. Make your path smoother. And I love Eleanor Roosevelt, and our mantra is learn from the mistakes of others because we can't live long enough to make them on your own. And that's an Eleanor Roosevelt quote.
I love that. I want to go backwards in a minute to talking about you as a little girl, but what inspired you to start Mentoring Her?
So it started because I have another organization called Magna Carta Health. I'm a physician. My focus is preventative health and public health. And so my entrepreneurial pursuits there in the healthcare field gained some attention. So I was getting an award. And during that award ceremony, there was a conversation and they were asking me who were my mentors. And I said, professor this, doctor that. They were all men. There's nothing wrong with that. But where it became a problem was because it led to a bigger conversation that they said, oh, women mentors are so hard to find. And oh, they're mean or they're unapproachable, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't think that's necessarily true. I figured instead it was because women have multiple roles in society. And so it's hard to have that time you want to connect with another woman to mentor them because you don't have the bandwidth. Right. And more likely than not, you're doing a million other things, right? You're a caregiver, your mother, your sister, your teacher, you're all sorts of these roles. And so I thought, how do I change the narrative? And I thought technology, right? And so that's basically what I did. I said, hey, I'm going to change the narrative by creating a platform where you just bring out your phone and you can connect with another woman across the world to mentor them and provide the learnings that you have learned on your path. And pretty much that's how it started.
I love that. Let's go back to you as a little girl. Just basic kind of background context info. So where did you grow up? What were you like as a kid? Sibling only child? We'll start there.
So I had an interesting childhood. I'm Nigerian American. And so I've lived in a few countries. I say, and the way I speak, so people say, oh, you're Nigerian, you don't have an accent. Or in Nigeria, they say, oh, you have an American accent. Or when I go to England, they say, huh, I hear different things there. So I've lived in the United Kingdom. I've lived in Nigeria. I obviously live in the US now. I lived in Asia for a little bit. Actually, I lived in Malaysia. My father was based over there. My father was a diplomat. And I lived in, so I've had various chapters in my life. I've been fortunate to have various chapters in my life. So I grew up in the United States and in Nigeria. My formative years were in both places. I went to elementary school here. I went to Christian Catholic school, actually private Catholic school in St. Louis, Missouri, when I was younger, interestingly enough. But I also went to school. I went to school in the United Kingdom. So I was in boarding school at the age of 5 and 6 in the United Kingdom. So I had a really fortunate and exposed childhood where I was able to go from country to country and learn so many things about different cultures. And I think that impacted the way that I lived. And then I went back to Nigeria and I went to medical school in Nigeria, actually. And then I came back here. When I finished medical school and I did my medical internship, I realized that, hey, the cycle of poverty, ignorance and disease ran deep, and I needed to expand my knowledge. And I decided to come, obviously, to the best university that is in the world, in Hopkins.
Go Blue Jays.
Blue Jays. And so I came back to Hopkins to my degree, my public health degree, and then Harvard. But yeah, I had a wonderful and amazing childhood. But a lot of the things that I saw in my childhood through my travels, I saw a lot of poverty. I saw a lot of I saw injustice. I saw disparities, and through the lens that I saw it, I figured that my parents were my first mentors, and they showed me that it is important to live your life for others and not live just for yourself. And I think that really impacted me significantly as a child and even as an adult.
And at the time, this might be flashback to maybe you remember it, maybe you don't. At the time that you were doing that, like moving around, seeing different things, getting exposure to different things, obviously looking back on it now, it's a blessing, right? At the time, do you remember feeling that way, or do you remember feeling like an unsettled kid?
I think that's a good question, but I think, kids are really resilient. So I knew I was fortunate and privileged because my parents made me know that. They said, hey, this is not the norm. And you have to be grateful for everything, et cetera, et cetera. But then I felt, I went to boarding school when I was 5 or 6, I missed my mom. I wanted to be home. So I was sad too, right? I mean, I was forced to eat the things that I didn't want to eat, like proper English breakfast. I had to eat tomatoes. I don't like tomatoes. I had to eat tomatoes. And then I would do stuff. I would put them in my mouth, and when nobody's looking, I'll take it out and put it in my pocket.
Like any 5-year-old would do.
So I just had, I was just a kid, mm-hmm. right? But then as I grew older, I definitely realized that, yes, I did live a privileged life, and I was more fortunate than a lot of people, and I didn't take that for granted.
What are some of the things, either one or two traits, either by your parents together or your parents individually, that they taught you that you carry with you through life?
Hard work and caring for others. My father worked hard all his life. He came from really, 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 really humble beginnings, but he was fortunate to, he was a PhD from NYU. Mm-hmm. He went to scholarships, but he came from really humble beginnings. His mother was a street hawker. She used to sell fish and rice and food and stuff. So, and humility that, listen, it's not where you're from, it's where you go. But that you have to work hard to get to where you're going. And so that's why I think I'm very relatable to anybody. And I don't see class or social status. I think we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. Because when if somebody looked at my father he was into politics, and he was a senator. He was fortunate. And so the point there, though, is that if they had seen him at his highest heights, they were like, oh my gosh, he's so amazing. But I knew who he really was. And so he's the kind of guy that would stop on the street and feed the homeless and shake the homeless and have a conversation with the homeless, because, you don't know the stories and things like that. Or a young man that's trying to come up, he would pay that person attention, because you don't know who he's going to be tomorrow. Just like my father was a young man from really humble beginnings. So, and my mother gave everybody everything. She overgave. And so gave up her time, her money, her food. I thought, why are we always giving people stuff?
Mom, leave it for me.
Exactly. So I was taught at a very young age that you have to share everything you have, and just have enough for yourself. But if you have 10 of something, you can, one is enough. Give everything else out. So I think, I'm not as great as they were, but but I try.
You said a couple of things there. You said a bunch of things that really resonated with me. The two that are jumping out are the the idea of you never know somebody's story, right? Like you never know what somebody's going through, and just having that kind of just empathy or understanding of, so you don't know the backstory. You see a lot of things about, you see things about people, you might look at somebody and make a snap judgment on them, but you never really know their story present day or what their circumstances were. And also the part that you said that I also find super interesting is at the base of it, we're all humans. There's so much divisiveness, you know, in the world today. And it's like, if you look for the commonality of we're all humans, then it just helps. It's a great starting point and jumping off point. So
I completely agree.
Yeah. So I love that your parents carried that, inspired that in you, and obviously carried it. You're carrying it through. So let's talk a little bit. So what did you, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a doctor.
Okay. Hey, well done.
but I wanted to be a psychic. So I love Mother Teresa. I was exposed to her from a young age, and I was like, how is she so giving of her stuff? I'm like, you know, and so she was somebody that she was my mentor from afar. But then I love the human mind. My cousin tells me that, so I wanted to be a psychiatrist actually, because I still think that the human mind is the most dangerous thing in the whole world. It's the most exciting and most interesting, but also the, and so like, if I could understand the human mind, I could conquer all.
Mm-hmm.
However, I went to medical school. I went for my psych posting and it was crazy. And I was like, nope.
Like crazy in what sense? Like hard or just not interesting?
It was hard.
And you lost?
I felt crazy. It was intense. It was painful. It was sad. It was so many emotions that I realized that the reason why psychiatrists have the highest rate of suicide in the medical profession is because of what they're exposed to. I couldn't do it. I realized that I couldn't do it. It was not my calling. In fact, I was like, what am I doing here? You know, because the pain and suffering that is associated with mental health was too much for me to bear. And the suffering of people, I couldn't bear that.
It is, and it does give you a different perspective, and respect is the wrong word, but different perspective on people that can do that and carry that. It's like it's just a different type of skill set that maybe people have innately to do, but I'm with you to carry that emotional baggage would be tough.
And I was like, no, this is not how I want to spend the rest of my life. Because for me, the type of medicine that I wanted to do was medicine that I would see people get well, right? In mental health, there are no certainties. In health in general, there are no certainties, but there's some, like what I'm doing, you know, I can say, hey, you're my ideal kind of patient, Lauren.
Right.
You know, preventative meds, you're well, you're seemingly well, you know. They're more success stories than, you know, bad stories, right?
Sure.
In mental health, it's just such a challenging and interesting and amazing, but sometimes really, really sad field of medicine that I realized that I don't have the wherewithal to handle. And so mm-hmm. I didn't do that anymore.
Well, it's certainly good. I feel like as an overarching theme that mental health in general is being talked about more versus it being maybe some sort of a stigma that it was years ago. So,
yeah.
So take me through. So you go to school, what do you study? And then you graduate and you go do what?
Yeah. So I became a physician, right? So I became a physician. So I was like, okay, I'm still going to do medicine, but then I'm like, okay, I can't do this. I'm too lily-livered, so to speak. I don't have the skill set. you know, and so I said, okay, what do I care about most? I care about people, and I care about people feeling well and healthy, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's why I just went into, okay, let me focus on people before they get sick. So maybe they're not going to be as bad. And so preventative medicine is the focus of meaning focus on preventing death, disease, and disability. And I'm like, hey, that works perfectly for me. And also of public health, whereby, you know, I can touch millions of lives or tens or thousands or hundreds of lives at once. And that was what was, you know, made me, I was passionate about that as well. So I went into it head on. And so, you know, I came to Hopkins, right? And at Hopkins, that opened my eyes to so much that the world had to offer. I mean, you know Hopkins, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just an amazing thing to have the opportunity to go to Hopkins and learn the things that I learned. And I've been able to use that to empower myself and empower others.
And then, so do you go from, so I know that, and we're going to get into entrepreneurship in general. Do you graduate and go into, like, do you go into a practice? Do you go into starting your own business? Give me kind of a time, like, what did your 20s
So I worked in corporate America after that, you know, okay. Like, I need to work, right? And in fact, even while I was in school, I was in graduate school, I was working at Hopkins. And so I continued that in the clinical research world, and I continued working, and I, you know, made money. And, but then I was like, my learning isn't done. So I went to Harvard, but then during all of that time, I realized that as great as it is to work for other people, I was going through things personally as a human being, not just as a physician. You know, I was losing people that I loved. I had already lost some people that I loved, but, you know, I'd had personal losses. And the most impactful one was my father, right? He died of T-cell lymphoma. While I couldn't have saved him, he had cancer, but I'm thinking that if we had, he had done his preventative tests, we might have found out sooner. He was doing it, but long story short, we lost my father. Mm-hmm.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And so that really hit home. And that's just one of the losses. I had lost so many other people, the things that I thought we could have prevented, right? By getting the test done early, by paying attention early, earlier than we did. And so that's what I was like, look, you know what? My husband and I, who's also a physician, we said, you know what? We need to do this. We need to change the culture of health. A lot of people don't care about it that much. They care about money more. They care about celebrity more. You know, let's do this thing. I mean, we live in America and we thought we would do it here. But then I thought, hey, look, they need it more in Nigeria, right? Like, America's one thing, but Nigeria is like, they have zero culture of health. It's a sick care country, not a well care country. When you're sick, you see a doctor. You can't go see a doctor when you're seemingly well. They thought I was crazy. So long story short, when my father passed away, we started Magna Carta Health. That is the healthcare company, which is a preventative health organization that uses technology to prevent death, disability, and disease.
And what would you say are some of the, when we talked about preventative health, like, what are your top 3 to 5 things for people to do when we talk about preventative health or preventative medicine?
I think one thing, and I think a lot of people generally are paying attention to that, you need to know your body, right? A lot of people, you have telltale signs that there's something wrong with you. And my father had a lump in his groin area, and he had seen it, he had known, but he didn't tell me anything. Just like, it's just a lump. But then later on he did, and that's when we started, you know, getting treated and all that stuff. But it was too late. He had stage 3 at that time and it advanced. But long story short, know your body, right? Because your body tells you you have a headache, you know there's something wrong. Pay attention. Our men folk, they're the worst. They don't want to go to the doctor. When I talk in places and I say, hey, who hasn't seen a doctor here 1 year? They're the first to raise up their hands. Bragging rights. I'm like, don't brag, put down your hand. That's bad.
There's no trophy for that.
No trophy. So most importantly, know your body and pay attention to your body. And if your body's speaking to you, listen.
And how much, oh, go ahead.
And don't skip your test. Like women, we try not to skip our tests. We get reminders, don't skip your test. Do your preventative test. Go and see your doctor. Yes, you're well, but you're not. You're seemingly well. And we do know that the WHO definition of well health is not just an absence of disease, but, you know, mental and social. It's the mental, physical, and social well-being, right? That is health. So it's not just one thing that, hey, you're not physically sick, but it's a multitude of things. So really go and see a doctor, even if you're seemingly well, right? And there's so much, you know, pay attention, lifestyle, exercise, and, you know, the usual suspects.
That's what I was. That was going to be my next question. You started off there. How much in your practice? Because I'm legitimately interested in getting educated here on this topic, real quick. How much in your practice do you focus on preventative medicine being tests? Know your body. You know, if you notice something wrong, go to the doctor. You know, whatever. I'm making this up. This is not medical advice. But walk half an hour a day. Yeah. Eat these certain things. Like how much, get enough sleep. Like how much is that factor in?
So that's what I was going to say. So the other things, like get a lot of sleep, is so important, right? Our circadian rhythm, we have to sleep. I mean, our bodies were not built to stay on and on and on. You can survive for a certain amount of hours of sleep. But those people that say, oh, they only sleep for 3 hours. That's BS, right? Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. You're going to crash at some point in time. You can you know, do that for 3 hours for a month, and then one for 3 days, and the next month you're going to sleep all, you know, constantly. Mm-hmm. So your body needs that sleep to re-energize and reinvigorate. Sleep is so important. I think there's a TED talk about sleep that talks about the benefits of sleep. So number one, sleep well, you know, so that's important. Number two, we talk about exercise. Like I was telling my husband, we need a Peloton because I'm not walking as much as I walk, you know, it's getting cold. I'm like, dude, we really need a Peloton right now. Seriously. Right. Spin bike that I have at home is not working. I don't go to the gym as much as I don't go to the gym anymore because it's COVID.
Sure.
We're back open. So I've been walking. I've always walked, but I've been walking so much more. So, and walking is the easiest form of exercise that you can do. So we preach that because when we see a patient that is hypertensive, for instance, right, we don't just say, hey, take your pills. Or if you see that you're pre-hypertensive and say, hey, you don't have hypertension now, but you're going to develop hypertension if you continue. We say, this is the way you're not going to become hypertensive. You need to start walking. You need to stop, watch your diet. You need to do this. And so a lot of what we do is really heavily focused on your lifestyle and modification of your lifestyle.
Okay, so take us through so I'm going to bounce back because I have a couple more things I definitely want to make sure that we cover. Take us back to you start your practice and then give the quick evolution of you have your practice, you're in Nigeria, you come back to the U.S., and then what happens between that and starting mentoring her?
Okay, so my practice in Nigeria is, so I'm going back and forth now, actually. I'm in the U.S.
Okay.
With Nigeria, like I was in, when we started the first year, I was in Nigeria for 8 months because I had to get things going, get people to know us and things like that.
And how long ago is this? Just for a time?
2014.
Okay. Gotcha.
And then we started going back for 8 months, and then I started going back and forth, you know, trying to get things situated and getting people to know us because people are like, what is preventative health? Like, seriously, I should pay money to see you and I don't have a problem. So that was tough getting people to understand. And so we had a B2B and B2C. So we focused on the companies that say, hey, let us help you make your employees well so that they can work better, help your bottom line. And so we got some inroads and then the direct to consumer say, hey, you know, you need to stay well, you know. And so we have people walking in. People just walk in now and say, hey, I want to see, because everybody's getting more aware. There's been a lot of efforts and education and things like that. And people want to live. And so I was just doing that. And it's during that time, one of those years in between, that I was getting this award for the Women Means Business Award. That conversation happened where they were like, who are my mentors? And so I kept on thinking about it. And so after that, like a few months after that, it just kept on bothering my mind about this mentorship and women mentorship. So I thought about a name. I'm very good with names. Like I can name anything. And so I bought the URL Mentoring Her. I kept it for 2 years and I did nothing. And then in 2019, I said, look, this is like, no, I can't delay it anymore because I was getting I was mentoring people a lot. I was coaching, I was mentoring people a lot. And people kept on saying, hey, they need a mentor. Do I know someone? And I'm like, this is so needed. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to take some time aside and focus on this. And that's what I did in 2019, I registered a company and I went through all the processes. And I'm like, okay, this is new. Oh no, before that, I was like, part of what took me so long, I said, I was going to build my website myself. Yeah, I forgot about that. I don't know how to code. I still don't know how to code.
And then you decided that that's going to take too much time and I'm just going to pay somebody to do it.
Yes. Fund your weaknesses. That's another thing I learned. As an entrepreneur, I was like, no, this is not going to work. And so I tried to learn how to code actually, but that's not my skill.
I love that. Fund your weaknesses. So that's a good segue to, go ahead. I didn't want to cut off.
Yeah. And so they basically, in 2019, I realized that, look, this is not going to work. My kids are learning how to code now because I can't code.
And so then you decided you invested in the URL. You got it. I mean, like getting the website built, you got it built. And then you were just off to the races.
Yep. And I just kept on going. Now I'm still going.
And so talking about entrepreneurship, because you just said it there, which is, I like that, fund your weaknesses. What are some, talk about your, I'm going to ask this, actually, let me, I'm going to change how I'm going to ask the question. If you could give two pieces of advice to entrepreneurs that have two, I'm going to ask it two ways. Two pieces to people that have not started a business that are on the cusp of it, and then two pieces to people that are in early, early stages, what would they be?
I think number one, it's about making sure that your idea is not just an idea to yourself, right? Making sure that an idea is that it's an idea that's going to benefit something else, because we get caught up in the fact that, oh, this is such a great idea. Your family or friends around you, it's like, oh, this is an amazing idea. But then when you take it to market, nobody wants it, right? So you have to find a way to validate your idea and make sure that it is beneficial to other people. So I think that's really important, because I've done so many other things. I'm like, no, this tanks. You know, I have like a book of ideas. So I think that's really important for you to validate your ideas. So you don't waste a lot of time and money and resources trying to put something out there that nobody wants. This one. And then number two, and it's like a segue, or it's not a segue, it's, it falls with number one. For people that have already started, a quick way to validate your idea is to create your minimum valuable product. Like, what are you trying to sell to people? What is it just, so you create something small that will cost you little money or no money at all, or even if, like, do you people need it? But get as much, and will people pay for it, right? If it's a real business or it's a hobby. I recently did, in Nigeria, we recently launched Mentoring Her in Nigeria, actually last week, and we did this pitch-a-thon, and 10 finalists were chosen to pitch like a Shark Tank event, and they all had great ideas. And, but, you know, some of them have businesses and some of them had ideas, but we had told them, like, hey, this your idea, what, for the new ones, we need to see the minimum valuable product, and are people willing to pay? Because there were some great ideas, but to me, well, to the judges, they were just hobbies, right? They're never going to scale. It's too small, you know, and if it's a hobby, yeah, that's fine. But if you are serious, that's a business, create something, share with the people that are your target market, and see if they're going to really pay for it. Because again, you don't want to waste your time and, you know, you attach so much money and time and effort into it, and it's not going to
go anywhere.
Yeah. And so pretty much those are, and don't fall too much in love. I mean, your ideas, I have a book of ideas. I have a spreadsheet with ideas, you know, and they're ideas, right? It doesn't mean they're going to go anywhere. I can even give it to somebody, but you know, you shouldn't be too attached to it, because it might not work, and that will make you feel like, oh, I'm a failed entrepreneur. No. Even walking that path, trying to, you know, an entrepreneur is a risk taker, right? Mm-hmm. Never feel like you have failed or you're a failed entrepreneur. If you have been an entrepreneur, that in itself, it's a success. So never, ever feel like a failed entrepreneur.
Talk a little bit about, you mentioned that you have kids, and obviously you mentioned that you're married and have a whole bunch of stuff going on work-wise. How old are your kids-ish?
My son is going to be 13 and my daughter is going to be 9 in about a month and a half. And she keeps telling us.
So talk a little bit about the integration of family and work and just your experience with that, or tips or anything that comes to mind for that topic.
You know, somebody asked me this in an interview, like, oh, and it was a man that was asking me, he said, can women have it all? And I said, that's a... It's hard, you know, that's what I'm going to say. Integrating everything is hard, because I, you know, energy is like 100%. If you take 50% to something, you only have 50% left. And so it has to go something else. So to answer your point, one, you have to have willing people that's going to work with you to make it succeed. So fortunately, I have an amazing husband who has been a partner and everything, and he has supported me. If he wasn't supporting me, I couldn't do it. I couldn't mm-hmm. do the things that I do. I travel, I speak, I do this, and I say, hey, and he's 100% supportive. My kids too. My daughter said, she said something, and I said, would you not want me to work anymore? She said, no. I said, why not? I said, because you love to work, and she said, it makes you happy, and she said, because, and then you make a lot of money, or something like that.
What a lesson, though, that she's watching mom is doing her thing. Mom's doing what brings her joy.
Yeah, I was happy. I was really, really happy when she said, and I gave her a hug. And she was like, you know, because she said something. I think she was trying to mimic me or imitate me. And so she was sitting in front of something and she was working on a computer and talking on the phone at the same time. And she was like, oh, is that work? And so like, do you not want me to work? And she was like, no. So it was like imitation is the best form of flattery. So she was, you know, she was supportive. She was showing her support. And she was just trying to be me. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to clarify that I hope it's okay. And she was like, no, I want you to work.
Yeah, she's like, go get it, Mom. I love exactly. it. Exactly. What has been in your career some, if you could give your younger self some advice, what would be a piece of advice that you would give your younger self?
Oh, that's a good question. I asked myself if I could write a letter to my 16-year-old self. Is that advice would be, do more.
Elaborate for me.
Yeah. Do more. Because, you know, I come from a patriarchal society in Africa. Well, Nigeria is patriarchal. And a lot of the countries, not all. And then even in Asia, like in India, it's patriarchal. So it's like women can't do this, women can't say that. And so that culturally holds you back, even though I came from an exposed family. My father's PhD at NYU, et cetera, education. I went to school in England, America. But still, you know, I'm surrounded by still some people that have those values. So that inadvertently must have impacted me. Like, okay, I have to chill. I can't be, but you know, some things I had to unlearn, but I unlearned them when I was older. So, you know, in retrospect, I'm like, no, I would have done more.
Has there been somebody in your career, and you can either name the person or just the traits, but from a mentor standpoint with you, and we talked about this a little bit, that it's been more, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but if I heard you correctly, it's been more male people that maybe influenced you or mentored you versus female. Yeah. What are some of the, and there can be obviously fantastic, and it's interesting because even part of the reason that I do this podcast is I had a similar experience where most of my mentors were, or people that I were learning from were male, which was great in a lot of facets, but the integration of what it means to be a woman, a mom, a wife is different, not good or bad, just different than what it is to be a husband or a father. So, and work and the household responsibilities that naturally fall and how you work through that. And to your point, having a supportive spouse is, I believe, essential. And you have to have somebody in your corner like that cheering for you. But anyway, one of the reasons I started this podcast was literally that reason of I didn't feel like I had anywhere to go throughout my career. Wow, what? And then I started talking with more women. I was just like, wow, what a, had I known that when I was 25, that would have been awesome, right? And I say this all the time, very pleased and grateful and super happy for everything in my life. But wow, just that little piece of information about whatever it is, what trajectory or difference might that have made? So anyway, that's a long-winded setup for my question, which is there can still be a fantastic male mentors. What have been from the mentors in your life, one or two pieces of advice that really resonated with you that you learned?
One was that my father is my first greatest mentor. Is that, you know, I there's so many things I'm trying to pick which one is that empathy and being empathetic is an amazing and important human trait to have, because it's more, an empathetic person is more likely to, it just, empathy touches the heart and does amazing things more than you would ever know. And I believe that. And I hold on to it. My father was a truly empathetic person. And I think I took that from him. And because when you care about your fellow human being, or when you care about people, or you care about how their outcomes are and things like that, or when you, it, empathy shows when you care about how somebody's day really was, and not to say, how was your day? And that you wait to listen to hear, and they say, I had a bad day. And then you'll be like, oh, what can I do to help you? It does so much, and it transcends so much more than money can, right? Mm-hmm. Money ever would. So I think that's something that, and I've seen it happen. And the benefits are tremendous. You know, it goes on and on and on. Not just to you, to the person, but to you yourself in ways that you can, tangible and intangible ways. So empathy touches the heart and impacts our lives in so many amazing ways. And one of my mentors, my male mentors, do you know Desiderata? Desiderata?
Mm, no. Oh, I feel like I should though. What is it?
It's something. It's John Maxwell Desiderata. He's the one that shared it with me, and I read it from time to time. It's something that you should look up. It's like a. I'm trying to Google it right now. It's like a, not like a prayer, but it just says so much.
I'm gonna link it up in the episode notes.
Yeah,
for people to reference it.
It just says so much, and it's just telling you how to go placidly amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be in silence. And as far as possible, without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even the dull and the ignorant. They too have their story. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter, but always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself. Enjoy your achievements as well as your plans. Keep interested in your own career, however humble. It is a real possession in the changing fortunes of time. Exercise caution in your business affairs, for the world is full of trickery. But let this not blind you to what virtue there is. Many persons strive for high ideals, and everywhere life is full of heroism. Be yourself, especially do not feign affection. Neither be cynical about love, for in the face of all oddity, it just goes on and on and on. I don't want to take all that time. It's just amazing.
So that is something that
I hold dear.
I'm gonna link that up because that there was so much in there that just, it just resonates, right? And it's like, if that's a guiding light or guiding principle, it feels good. I'm gonna ask one last question before we get to rapid fire. How do you define success?
The life that I'm living now, where I can impact the lives of people, even people that can't say thank you to me, and know that, and also know that I don't have to worry about certain things, and know that I'm happy. And that's how I define success. My attitude, good things may come, bad things may come, but you know, I will always get through them. So my success is not a measure of how much money I have or how much celebrity status I have. It's actually about how much impact I have made in the lives of others and the kind of life that I've lived.
Is there anything else before we get to rapid fire, which is unrelated to anything we've talked about? Is there anything else, any other topics or anything that you want to cover that we haven't yet gotten to?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. So I'm going to go to, this is rapid fire, unrelated, just say like the first thing that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So maybe like 6 or 7 questions. Netflix or cable?
Netflix.
Ocean or beach?
Beach.
Rock or stone or brick?
Brick.
Coffee or tea?
Tea.
Astronaut or deep sea diver?
Astronaut.
And last one is grass or sky?
Sky.
All right. that will wrap us up. This is the Lauren Asghari podcast, How'd Her Career Get There? And thank you again so much. Again, my guest is Dr. Lola Adeyemi. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me, Lauren. It was great.
All right. We'll talk next time.
All right.